Okay, we're on page 810, chapter 15, middle of the page. The last time we just began it, we didn't really learn it. Hashem spoke to Moshe. Now, the story until now, and we'll soon see the connection between all these things, that the Meraglim came back, Hashem decreed they're not going into Eretz Yisrael. The Jews said, oi, we're going to do tshuva, we're going to go anyway, Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't go, you're not going to be successful. Hashem's not with you. They didn't listen, they went. The nations of Amalek came and destroyed them. Okay, that was the story up to now. So, Hashem said to Moshe, saying, Dabar b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, and tell them the following. When you will come to the land of your dwelling place, meaning Eretz Yisrael, Asher ani noisen lachem, which I'm giving you. And this we did discuss last week, that the Mefarshim comment, what's the connection between this and the previous portion with the Meraglim? Because after the Jews heard that they're not going into Israel for 40 years, then the Jews got scared. They said, okay, see what's going to happen? At the end of the 40 years, the Jews are going to do another sin. And again, we won't go into Israel, so we're never going to go there. So the Torah says over here, no. I'm promising you that you will be going into Eretz Yisrael. There's no question, I promise you, you're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. So he says, but when you do go into Israel, and you will make an offering to Hashem, an elevation offering, or a feast offering, or because you articulated a vow, or just as a gift offering, to make a good smell for Hashem. I'll explain this whole pasuk in a second. Whether it's from cattle or from sheep. Here the Torah is going into a new mitzvah of sacrifices that we learned already about in the book of Vayikra. But here we're learning about what's called the libations. Together with each sacrifice, they had to bring flower offerings, they had to bring wine offerings that we're going to see, oil offerings. Everything was brought for these korbanos. In the desert, they didn't have to bring it. In the Midbar, they didn't have to bring it. When they came into Eretz Yisrael, then they have an obligation to bring all these different types of libations, which is called in English, meaning the flower offerings and the pouring of the wine and the oil and all that stuff. Now, there are different levels of sacrifices, like we learned already earlier, a while ago, in the book of Vayikra. There are what's called burnt offerings, and a lot of it, these were not even obligatory sacrifices. These were sacrifices that the person himself wanted to bring. There was what's called a carbon ola. A carbon ola was completely burnt, except the hide of the animal which the Kohanim got. When you donated, let's say, a burnt offering, as it was called, the whole animal got burnt. Nobody ate anything except the altar. The Mizbeach ate of the carbon, so to speak. Then there was what's called the Zevach, which was like a carbon shlomim, which is called a peace offering. Why is it called a peace offering, our sages tell us? Because it made everybody happy. The altar ate a little bit of it, the Kohen got a little bit of it, the owner that brought it got a little bit over of it. Everybody was happy, everybody got something from it. So the Torah says that if you will bring Ola, meaning a burnt offering, or Yizavach, or this Shlomim, meaning this peace offering, and it's either because you made a vow, you know, that you're going to bring a carbon, or Bin Dava, a person made a Nedava, or Bin Mayadechem, or the Chagim. Okay? Lasis, why are they bringing it? To make Reach Nicheach LaHashem, this good smell to Hashem, min habakar or min hatzein. Now, what does it mean, a good smell to Hashem? Like we learned already in Vayikra, Rashi just mentions it very briefly. Nachas Ruach does not mean God has a smell, and God smells the burnt offering, and it says, ah, what a great barbecue. It means that God told you to do something, and you listened. The Grashi says over here short, Nachas Ruach Lefane. It's the enjoyment that God tells us that we need to bring a korban. Now, in this whole parsha that we're going to be learning now, there is inanimate, plant, animal, and human. Okay? Everything in the world is categorized. Dormeim, Tzemeach, Chai, Medaber. Inanimate, plant, animal, and human. The word korban, we learned, comes from the word korov, close. The concept of a korban is to bring a person closer to Hashem. But when a person brings a korban, we want that the entire world should be elevated. Everything. So therefore, as we'll soon learn, when they brought the korbanis, they actually brought from inanimate objects, plant, animal, and the human brought it. So actually, when a person brought the sacrifice with all these additional libations that the Torah is going to be speaking about, we see that the inanimate was elevated, plant, animal, and human were all elevated to Hashem anytime a sacrifice was brought. So it actually elevated everything that existed in the world. And therefore Hashem wanted that every sacrifice should have a little bit of each aspect as this elevation of the world to Hashem. So he says like this, V'hikrev ha-makriv korban el Hashem, Pasuk Dalet, the one that brings a korban to Hashem, he has to bring like this, Mincha seles isarin, a mincha, a tenth of an epha of fine flour, bolul mixed, b'divias ahin shamin with a quarter of a hin of oil. Again, these are all biblical measurements. There was a revia sahin. There was isarin, a tenth of an epha. Isarin means a tenth of an epha. Rashi just goes through a few things, how much the measurements are. But basically, you have to bring X amount of oil. You have to bring X amount of flour. V'yayin anesach revia sahin. And wine for the pouring libation, a quarter of a hin. Tasa al ha'ola elazavach lekeves ha'echad. You have to bring it for every ola, every burnt offering, or every shlomim carbon. That means there was a peaceful carbon that everybody ate from. Lekeves ha'echad per animal. So in other words, if a guy brought 10 animals, you couldn't just bring one X amount of wine and one X amount of flour. This amount of flour and oil mixed and the wine that you needed to bring was per animal. Okay, so like this says, there was a tenth of an epha mixed with oil. That was per carbon, per animal, you needed to bring that amount of flour with that amount of oil. For every carbon, you needed to bring a revia sahin of oil. That was, I mean, of wine. That's what you needed to bring. What? In the Mishkan, they didn't bring this, in the Midbar. Right. Once they came into Eretz Yisrael, they were, fine flour. That was the business that they sold. Yeah? Unless if a guy wanted to bring this from his own house.
What about the flowers?
Why?
Which flour?
They had some
Ketores. This is not the Ketores. The Ketores the Kohen had to bring. This is a personal obligation and a personal private carbon.
They had to be very good quality of material.
Well, solas means fine flour. You have different grades of flour. When you brought a carbon, it had to be the best. So you had to bring solas, which is fine flour. Kemach. In Hebrew, kemach is flour, solas is flour. Solas, though, in Hebrew is fine flour, the best type of flour. And this is not the best type of flour.
And the Kohen Gadol had to approve the quality before...
No, the halacha, they know the halacha, the Kohen would know what it is, the people know it, yeah.
So the Kohen had to approve this.
Yeah, yes.
What did they do with the wine?
They poured it on the Mizbeach. Well, since they poured it on the Mizbeach.
They do it just for the...
We're going to soon see, Rashi explains, that the flour and the oil was actually burnt on the Mizbeach. Part of it, at least. Part of it. The wine was not burnt on the Mizbeach. It was poured on the Mizbeach and actually ran out into the ground.
So
there was a pipe that it ran. Huh?
So it didn't
the burn. Wine didn't get burnt. No. And we'll soon see, because by the other things it says, Ishei Reach Nechayach. It's a burnt offering. By the wine, it doesn't say that.
Wait, would they drink the wine?
No, no, no.
So none of the wine got drank?
No. Got drunk. They got drunk. They poured the wine on the side of the Mizbeach, and it actually went down. What? We'll get there soon. We'll soon see what it is.
Is there a reason why they do like fine flour, like the best flour?
Well, when you bring something to God, it got to be the best. We're going to see that more in the next paragraph in the Chumash, but it had to be the best. God doesn't want everything. God says, I don't need everything. I just want the best of what you give me. When you give me, don't give me junk. That was the whole fight between Cain and Hevel. Okay, why did God accept Hevel and not Cain? Because Cain brought junk, and Hevel brought the best. So God said, okay, here are yours I'm accepting. Yours I'm accepting because you brought me the best. And Cain brought me junk. I'm not interested in accepting it. We're going to see more by the mitzvah of challah, which is in the next paragraph. I didn't forget it today or not. But Hashem says, I don't want everything. All I'm asking is, what you give me the best. Now, Chassidus explains, what's this inyan of the libations, the pouring? Okay, like, why is there... There's a burning part of the carbon, and then there's the pouring part of the carbon, which is the wine. Okay? So it says, first of all, the I forgot who says it. One of the Mefarshim explained an interesting concept. Why did God now tell them, after the story of the Meraglim, why did God tell them to bring the wine offerings? So he says, because the Jews, when they the spies came back, so remember one carried a pomegranate, one carried a fig, and eight of them carried a cluster of grapes. So they came back using the grapes as a negativity about Eretz Yisrael. What did they say? You see, the fruits are so crazy, the people are so crazy big. You know, the fruits are so powerful, the people even more powerful. We're never going to count. So Hashem said to forgive that aspect of wine, which was used negativity, in the negative way, Hashem said, because of that, now I want you to use wine in a positive way. And therefore, like we said, in the 40 years in the desert, they were not obligated to bring this. What does the Pasuk say? When you come into the land, that's when you have to bring these things. Meaning in the Midbar, it says you don't have to bring it. Why? Because in the Midbar was still that generation of the spies. You know, people died at 60, but they were still alive. So they made fun of the wine. So Hashem said, you know what? You guys, I don't want doing anything with the wine. So, but now that they're coming into Eretz Yisrael and they're forgiven, so to speak, of the sin of the spies that brought back the cluster of grapes as something negative about Eretz Yisrael, so Hashem says, now, you know what? I want you to use it for something positive. Use it as the basis. But Chassidus explains an interesting concept. You have... We learned, we just mentioned again, carbon means close. Okay, karov. A carbon, a sacrifice, brings the Jew closer to God. There are two ways that you can become close. Really, there's three ways, but two general ways. To use physical analogies, if God's up there and we're down here, either God comes down or we go up. Okay, that's basically it. There's a third way of meeting midway. Okay? No, that's Chesed Gvura Teferes. That's what you find by Har Sinai. Hashem came down and Moshe Rabbeinu went up. Okay, but that's the concept of three, the aspect of three of Matan Torah.
That means compromising?
No. Not compromising Yiddishkeit.
When you're meeting somebody in the middle.
It's called marriage.
So
that's
good too.
Now, a carbon that they burnt on the Mizbeach, the fire symbolizes the animal going up. You take the animal, you put it on the Mizbeach, the animal becomes burned, it becomes consumed in the heavenly fire. That symbolizes, Chassidus explains, the level of earth going up. The pouring of the wine on the Mizbeach, that symbolizes the pouring from higher to lower. That symbolizes the connection with God, the carbon of Hashem coming down to us. So now that the Jews are coming into Eretz Yisrael, this golden calf was forgiven, and the spies are forgiven, and they're starting a new slate, coming into Eretz Yisrael with the new concept of sacrifices. So Hashem says, this is what I want. I want, not only should the carbon be burnt, going with the animal up, but I want godliness coming down. And this is, what?
Oh, you can finish.
No, I finished.
Oh, okay. Why wouldn't you say the Shema is like God one, so he's like everywhere? I don't know, maybe I'm off.
No, God's everywhere, but that's...
And then here he's out.
Yeah, God's all over, but we have to attach ourselves to him. We have to become closer
higher
to him.
Higher than us from the...
But we need to attach ourselves to him. So it has to be both. The sacrifice has to be God coming down and us going up.
Do you know of any groups that practice this today in Israel? Maybe?
No, today you're not allowed to do it because we don't have a Beis HaMikdash.
But are there certain people that say, no, we should do it, and they just
Not religious Jews.
But
it's against Torah to do it.
But there's nobody who's going against Torah and doing it that you've heard of?
Not that I know of.
The animal that we burn it is means that we have some characters of animals. It's very bad.
We're elevating the animalistic temptations of a person. Right.
So they're talking about connection. I was curious that each time that Abraham was tested, each test brought him closer to Hashem.
Correct.
So basically, every test that Hashem gives to us is an opportunity for us to find a way to get closer to Hashem.
That's the whole proof. Yeah, that's it. Every time we're given a test is we become closer to Hashem. Every time you become challenged and you overcome the challenge, you become closer to Hashem.
So every time we are...
Not only that, you become closer to Hashem more than doing a mitzvah that you're not challenged with.
I'm sorry, again?
Every mitzvah brings us closer to Hashem, right? Certain mitzvahs we find easy to do, or easier to do. Certain mitzvahs we find harder to do. Right? So even though every mitzvah brings us closer to Hashem, the harder the mitzvah is, and we still do it, it's even closer to Hashem than those mitzvahs which are easier to do.
But when you have like difficulty in life, and that difficulty, you look at it that there's a message in this difficulty.
Correct.
And that's what's called the test. And that you pick up on that message that I need to make an improvement in certain part of my life. And you figure out that which you need to make an improvement, and that you make that improvement.
And you do it.
And you do it. That's the message that God
gives
us.
Yeah. That, as the English expression, you can do it. You could do it.
Every test it gets harder. That's the truth.
The tests in second grade are harder than first grade. Third grade is harder than second grade. Would you expect a third grader to get a first grade test? The greater the person becomes, the greater the challenge. I mean, that's what life is all about. We grow, we mature, we get older, supposed to get wiser. So obviously the challenges are going to be greater. You don't expect us to have the same challenges first graders have. I mean, come on.
We could also learn from other people's,
You have to learn from everything. But the challenge puts a person in a much greater relationship with God. That's why Avraham Avinu, why you mentioned it, had 10 tests, because there's 10 powers of the soul, and the 10 tests represented his relationship with God in every power of his soul. That's why God gave him 10 tests, not 5 tests. Because every power of the soul, which is 10, was given to Avraham Avinu as a challenge. Now, the fact that Avraham Avinu passed the test gives us the strength to do it. In other words, why does the Torah tell us that Avraham had a test? Who cares? It's not a history book. It's not a storybook, correct? We learned many times, Torah is guidance, teaching, right? Now, Avram had a test. Okay, wonderful. So, what does it have to do with me? Torah is telling us, if Avram had the test and passed, and he's our father, Avram Avinu, we have the ability to overcome all those tests also. That's why the Torah tells it to us. And the fact that Avram Avinu did it and passed the test, that gives us the ability and strength that we can pass the tests too.
The same test
as difficult, yes.
As difficult, but not necessarily the same.
Not the same test.
Difficult as in difficult relatively, or, his tests were pretty hard.
Avram's tests were very hard.
But
if you have a test on your level, that's also very hard.
Relatively
speaking, that's like Avram Avinu in his test.
No, I'm saying hard for us, relatively speaking, as it was for him.
Correct.
As hard as his.
Correct.
Okay.
And the fact that the Torah tells us that he passed the test, that opens the channel that we can pass the test to. Once they brought this concept into the world of the ability to pass a test, everyone that's his child can also pass the test.
Because God knows the ability of each person.
God knows the ability of each person. God will not give us a test that we cannot do. Just like a parent cannot demand from a kid something the kid can't do. Or a teacher cannot demand from a kid something the kid can't do.
If this wine that they were bringing was Mabushal, could they still bring it or no?
No. No, by the way. In the Beis HaMikdash, cooked wine, wine mixed with other things, was not kosher.
Was not kosher to bring.
Right.
But you could drink. But isn't that because idolaters used to use it? Was it the standard of idolaters wouldn't use it if it was boiled?
No, because it's not fit for the altar. It's not really prominent wine, so the rabbis didn't forbid it. That's what it is.
So that was the reason.
That's the reason. No.
Others
no.
Didn't use it.
No.
But why did they create it as a wine and not just grape? Why don't we just put grapes and say bracha special for?
And the grapes?
Ois.
Yeah. Why they made it into the wine?
Why did they say ois?
There's two. You want deer showers?
Mm-hmm.
There are two liquids, and only two liquids, that are better than the original fruit. Olive oil is better than the olive. Wine is better than the grape. Okay? Now, in order to get wine or olive oil, correct? You had to figuratively torture the grape. How do you get wine? You squeeze the grape, you press it. I mean, conceptually, you're torturing the grape. In order to get something better than the thing itself, sometimes it needs to be tortured. The concept of wine represents that when you're tortured, you create something better than the thing itself.
Good mashfur, more mashfur.
Yeah.
Do you think it has to do with how the grape with the wine versus the olive oil? The grape, the insect has to mess with it too. So it's a combination of the ground and something that
there's two
a final product that gets you drunk.
There's two things. I don't really want to really get into this too much now, but there is the two liquids, wine and grape. Both represent something which is concealed and hidden within the fruit, right? The wine is hidden in the grape, the oil is hidden on the olive, right? Now, that refers to the concealed part. Therefore, the hidden part of Torah was called Sod, the secrets of Torah, is represented by wine. The Gemara has an expression, Nichnas Yain, is very interesting. The Gemara says a statement, and when you take it in a much deeper level, it's a whole different ballgame. The Gemara says a statement, Nichnas Yayin Yotza Sod. Simply means when the wine comes in, secrets come out. What's the simple meaning of the Gemara? When you get drunk, your tongue is loose, you say things, all the secrets come out. Okay? So the commentaries explain, which is more interesting, the word yayin, yud, yud, nun, is 10, 10, and 50 is 70. And the word sod, secret, samach, vav, dalid, is also 70. Wine, yayin, and sod, secret, are the same numerical value of 70. That's the simple meaning of the Gemara. Okay? The simple meaning of the Gemara is you get drunk, nichnas yayin, all the secrets come out. Okay? In a deeper sense, sod refers to the secrets of Torah. Yayin, wine, which is concealed in the grape, okay, represents the hidden part of Torah. Torah is called many different names. Torah is called bread. Torah is called water. Torah is called wine.
Fire.
Torah is called what?
Fire.
Torah is called a lot of different names. Each name, you don't need 10 names for the same thing. Okay? So obviously, every name of Torah, or every adjective of Torah, represents a different aspect of Torah. Okay? Lechem bread represents the revealed part of Torah. You see it, it's there, you know. Yayin represents, it was concealed in the grape. That refers to the secrets of Torah, which is called Kabbalah. Hasidic philosophy is likened to oil. It's called Shemen. There's Yeinu Shel Torah, and then there's the Rosin Dirosin, as Kabbalah says. There's the secrets of the secrets. That refers to oil. Why is oil more unique than wine in this aspect? So because oil is a unique thing that it rises above all liquids. It floats above all liquids. The Gemara uses the expression, Shemen shatzaf al kol mashke. Oil that floats on all liquids. Yet, oil, even though it floats on top, it makes the whole thing oily. Everything becomes oily, even though the oil stays on top. Which represents a level of Torah, which is called the essence, and I'll explain why in a second. The essence of Torah, which basically is above all the other aspects of Torah, but it influences all aspects of Torah. Like oil, makes everything oily. Because shemen, oil, is the essence of everything. If you squeeze this table hard enough, you will get oil out of it. You can make oil out of anything. You can make cottonseed oil. Cotton, not even, You squeeze anything because as the oil represents the essence of everything. The essence of Torah is called oil. The secrets of Torah is called wine. The revealed part of Torah is called either water or flour, each one representing different things. The fire, those represent the revealed parts of Torah. Then you have the hidden parts of Torah. So wine and oil that the Torah is speaking about over here, in a deeper sense, refers to the inner aspects of Torah, the inner aspects of the soul, not the revealed parts of the soul, but like Chaya Yechida, the willpower and the essence of the soul, these are all things that are revealed to and referred to in the name wine and oil. And therefore Hashem said, when you bring a sacrifice, you need to have the wine, you need to have the oil. But coming back to what you said about tests, a test is when you're squeezed. When it's difficult, that means you're squeezed. If it's easy, you're not squeezed. So a test is the concept of squeezing. But when you squeeze something, you come up with better things. And that's what a test does. How do you purify water? What's the concept of a filter? Right, a filter purifies things. The concept of a filter is actually, it's a blockage. And the water forces itself through. And by forcing itself through, it becomes purified, and all the garbage stays behind. Correct? But the concept of a filter that purifies things is a test, really. It's a difficulty. It has to push itself through, and once it becomes goes through, it becomes pure. So that's what a test does.
Is that considered straining on Shabbat? I'm serious, because I've had this question and I always forget.
Not about a test. The test you can have in Shabbat.
No, the water going through the screen and the filter, if you...
You could, water you could do, because you could drink it as is. But you can't strain something else.
No, but you know the ones that are under the sink, there's a filter.
That filter is not a problem. Because the water... Okay, we're not learning the whole Shabbos now. Now we're going away. Let's go back to the Chumash here.
Just to say about the fire. What was fire?
What is Torah refer to fire? No, not only that. Fire goes up. Fire elevates the person. Water is Torah coming down. There's an aspect of Torah of elevating the person to go higher. Right? Fire and water are two opposites. Water goes from high place to low place. And fire goes from a low place to a high place. So when a person studies Torah, two things happen to him. He brings down godliness into our brain. Learning God's Torah, right? God and Torah are synonymous. God and Torah is one. So when a person studies Torah, i.e. God, so you bring God into your brain. That's bringing God down. That's the level of water. By learning Torah, you're supposed to refine yourself and become a better person. So that elevates the person to go to a higher level. That's the level of fire. So these are the two things when a person... And therefore, when he came to the sacrifices, Hashem said, Chassidus explains, I want both things. I want you to take the animal and burn it on the altar. And at the same time, I want you to pour things from a higher level down to a lower level. Because in this connection between the Jew and Hashem, I want it to be done both ways.
But these people didn't understand this at the time that they were being...
Of course, the great tzaddikim understood it. Meshe Rabbeinu understood it.
Torah, because you have fire, you have flowers. Also, we have the wine. Everything that's Torah called, we have it in the sacrifice now.
Right. Yeah, now we have in davening. Yeah. Now we have all of this in davening.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Correct.
Interesting.
How did they extract all that from like that little wine? Like, how did they purify all that, like going up, going down?
How did they get these explanations? It was given to Moses at Sinai. Okay. Okay, sentence above, sentence 6. Or oila ayol tasemincha, or if it's a ram instead of a sheep, right? Then you prepare soles shnei esreinim. See, for a sheep, the flower offering was 1/10 of an ephah. This is 2/10 of an ephah. Belula v'shemen mixed with oil, shlish esahin, not a quarter of a hin, but a third of a hin. So the Torah says, if you're bringing a sheep, it's 1/10 of an ephah flour and a quarter of a hin of oil. If you bring a ram, it's 2/10, meaning a fifth, plus, instead of a quarter, you bring a third. V'yayin la'nesach, and for the wine pouring, shlish is a hin. You bring a third of a hin, not a quarter of a hin, but a third of a hin. Takiv rech nicheach la'Hashem, you bring it down as a good smell for Hashem, meaning that Hashem tells us to do it, and we do it. And again, like we learned a long time ago, if you think about it, sacrifices do nothing. I mean, what do you take an animal? What, like,
or
you don't ruin an animal.
Hashem loved the smell.
Oh yeah, he really loved the barbecue. It was a good barbecue, but they didn't put any spices. So how good could it be already? It says that Hashem said, even though it doesn't make sense.
How many times, every morning you read all of those alelukah and how much all of the davening and that Hashem loved all of the smell of the korban and whatever.
Doesn't say. It says in Chumash, it's a good smell for Hashem. But Rashi explains what it means. Obviously, cannot mean a good physical smell for God, because God doesn't have a nose that's smelling. It means that God said that I told you to do it, even though it didn't make sense, and it doesn't seem to make me a better person, and you still do it anyway. And in fact, Siddhis explains, while we're talking about this pouring of wine, during the year, they poured wine on the Mizbeach. Sukkis, they poured water on the Mizbeach. Simchus Beis HaSha'eva, right?
They're drinking all the wine.
They always had enough wine. But anyway, they didn't drink whiskey in those days. They drank wine, actually, much more. But it says that on Sukkis, they brought water on the Mizbeach. During the year, like we're learning here, they brought wine on the Mizbeach. And by the way, the Torah says this is only for donated korbanos. But if a guy sinned and he was obligated to bring a korban, he didn't bring these additional stuff. Just for if you donated a korban out of your own good free will. So it says, what's the difference that a whole year they poured wine on the Mizbeach, and on Sukkis they poured water on the Mizbeach, and the Gemara says the greatest joy was Simchas Beis HaSha'eva. Okay? So again, Chassidus explains, there's a difference between wine and water. Wine is a very delicious food, basically. It's a drink, but it is a very delicious food. Water, basically, is not considered halachically a food. You can't make an eruv with water. The only time you make a bracha on water is if you're thirsty. If you're not thirsty, you don't make a bracha on water. Like, if you're not thirsty, you need to swallow a pill. Right? You don't make a bracha on the water. If you're taking juice to swallow the pill, even if you're not thirsty, you have to make a bracha on the juice. But a water is not considered a food. Water is not considered a food unless you're thirsty. So then you enjoy it. Otherwise, it's not considered a food. So Chassidus explains what's conceptually the difference between wine and water. Water, which is tasteless, colorless, represents serving God with Kabbalah's oil, acceptance of the yoke.
Without any expectation.
Without any understanding, without expectations. We do it because God said so. Do you understand why you're doing it? No. I don't do it because I understand. I do it because God said so. Wine, which has a delicious taste to it, that symbolizes, Chassidus explains, understanding. I understand it. It makes sense. Then I want to do it because it makes sense. That's wine. Wine represents intellect. Water, on the other hand, represents doing it because God said so.
So the water is more important than wine.
Water, therefore, is a greater level than wine. And therefore, the Gemara says, the ultimate joy was only on Sukkot when they poured water on the Mizbeach. Because water symbolizes doing it because God said so. What's wrong if I do something because I understand it? What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with it. But then the problem is, because human intellect is limited, as smart as you are, you could be Mr. Einstein or whatever, it's still a limited seichel. It's still limited. The person's intellect is limited. Therefore, when you're serving God with your limited intellect, you can only reach a certain level based on what you understand. Based on what you understand, that's how much you're going to do. When you do it because God said so, then it's essence to essence, you know, eye to eye. Then you give yourself over completely to God. It's not limited anymore. It's the entire being. Nevertheless, during the year, the Torah still says, pour the wine on the Mizbeach. What does it mean, pour the wine on the Mizbeach? Take your intellect and give it over to God. Pouring it on the altar means, represents, giving your intellect over to God. What does that mean? Try to understand it, but don't do it because you understand it. Do it because God said so.
Nasa v'nishma.
That means nishma, yeah. It's not only nasa, it's not only just doing. It says we need to do, but the prerequisite, the premise of it is nasa, we're going to do it. Because God said so. Yeah, that's the... And that's where you find the very interesting medrash. There's a pasuk somewhere, Shlomo Melech says, Pesi Yamin l'chol davar. A fool believes everything. That's what the Shlomo HaMelech says. A fool believes everything. He's gullible, right? You can tell him the Brooklyn Bridge. So the Medrash says on that pasuk, listen to this. Pesi yamin l'chol davar. Who is Shlomo HaMelech referring to of the fool that believes everything? Moshe Rabbeinu. The Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu is the fool that believes everything. So the question is, Moshe Rabbeinu was the epitome of wisdom. Chochma Vatzilus, the highest level of wisdom with Moshe Rabbeinu. You're telling me he's a fool that believes everything? So Chassidus explains, what does it mean? It means that Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness was dafka, exactly this. As brilliant as he was, he did it like a fool who believes everything. He didn't serve God because of his intellect. He did it like a fool who believed everything. That was his greatness. So Shlomo HaMelech says, a fool believes everything. Refers to Moshe Rabbeinu's observance of Torah and Mitzvahs. He didn't do it because he understood it. Because if he did it because he understood it, great as he was, it would still be a limited relationship with God. And Moshe Rabbeinu had a much deeper relationship with God, of a fool, believe like water, Kabbalah, soul, tasteless, colorless. God said, I do. That's the ultimate level. The ultimate level, there's an expression Chassidus brings down from much earlier. It says, Tachlis Hayadiyah, this is about knowing God. It says, the ultimate knowing of God is Shelo Nedo'acha, that we don't understand you. The ultimate knowledge, the ultimate knowing of God is that we don't understand. Because if you understand, that's unlimited, and God's unlimited. The ultimate knowledge is to not understand.
So then we shouldn't be learning.
No. Why not? I'll tell you why not. So you also learned already. You have one. Number one, and a trillion. Just imagine when it's even bigger than the United States debt, not yet, almost. We're getting there. We're getting there. But meanwhile, a trillion and one. Who's closer to infinite?
One.
Really? Huh? Yeah. Well,
the same.
Trillion is infinite away, and one is infinite away. Yeah. Correct? They're both the same. They're infinite away from infinite. Right? As far as infinite is concerned, the biggest number and the lowest number is the same. A trillion, whatever. And one is exactly the same. It's true. It's the same. But there's still a big difference between one and a trillion. I'll tell you what the difference is. One, when one hears infinite, what does one think infinite is? $1 billion. $1 billion. One, because it's so little, so limited. One thinks it hears the word infinite. In its mind, what does it think infinite is? $1 billion. Yeah? A trillion knows what a trillion is. And when he hears the number infinite, not that he knows what infinite is, because he's also limited, but his understanding of what infinite isn't is much greater than the understanding of one.
True.
They both don't know what infinite is, because they're both limited. But a trillion has a better understanding of what infinite isn't, more than one is. Correct? And that's why we need to learn. Because the more you learn, the more you realize how nothing you know. No, the truth is, The more you learn, the more you see the greatness of God. Not that we understand the greatness, but a guy that doesn't learn, completely ignorant, what do they think God? Okay, 100, 100 points. You get to 1,000,000 points, 1,000,000,000 points in learning, I'm saying, and you see that this is nothing, so you have a greater understanding of what God isn't than the guy that doesn't learn anything. I told you many times this famous story. This Manus Friedman told me the story. He told it publicly. He was once giving a lecture somewhere, and this typical Yiddish lady comes up to him after the speech. He says, "I don't know what to do. My kid is going out with a shiksa. He wants to marry a shiksa. I don't know what to do. And here he is. Go talk to him." She's like, "Thanks for the warning." You know what I mean? It's like, maybe you go with him, so maybe you can think, you can know, here he is, go talk to him. So Shem gave him the idea in his head. He said to the guy, "Oh, so you're dating a non-Jewish girl. Okay. So that means that any question they have about Judaism in the guy's family, right, they're going to ask you because you're the Jew, you're going to be the scholar." He says, "Guess so." He says, "Are you learned enough to be able to answer all the Judaism questions? I mean, do you know? Like, you're gonna look like a moron. They're gonna ask you a question. You're not gonna know the answer. You're gonna be embarrassed." He says, "Don't you think you should learn a little bit about Judaism? That's to be able to answer the questions. You don't want to look like an idiot, a fool." So he says to him, "What's there to learn already? What's there to learn in Judaism? Okay, 10 minutes, I'll learn it all." He said, "What are you talking about? There's 24 books of scriptures, the 63 tractates of Talmud, there's billions and billions of books. Are you kidding?" He said, "We can learn the whole Judaism in 10 minutes. So he said to him, "You know what I would suggest? Before you marry this girl, you don't want to look like a moron. Just remember, you want to look like an... I think you should go wait to yeshiva to learn for a year. You go wait to yeshiva to learn. Then when you marry the girl, you'll have what to answer." Guess what? He went to yeshiva, married a frum girl, he's a frum guy. You know what I mean? What I'm saying is, the more you learn, the more you see there's more to know. And that's what Hashem wants from us. Okay, Pasuk Ches, Pasuk 8. When you make a bull as an elevation order or a feast offering, like we said before, either as a vow that you made or a peace offering to Hashem, so then you have to bring a different amount of this stuff. Then if you bring the flower offering for this cattle, then you need to be 3/10. In other words, for a sheep, you bring 1/10 of an eighth of flour. For a ram, you bring 2/10. For a bull, 3/10. And bashamen chotzi ahin, not a quarter of a hin, not a half of a third of a hin, but now you have to bring more oil. V'yayin takriv lanetzach chotzi ahin. And for wine, you need to bring a half in. In other words, the bigger the animal, the bigger the flower offering and the libations. But Rashi says over here that this only refers to the flour and the oil, because the flour and the oil mix, that was burnt on the Mizbeach. But the wine, like we said, was not poured on the Mizbeach. Okay, the wine was actually just poured on the altar and went down. Okay, then it says like this. Kamispar Ashert, Pasir Alam. Kochi Yasel Ashert Echot, this is what you do for each bull, or each ram, or each sheep, or for Ezim and goats. These amounts that we mentioned before. But the Torah is saying clearly here, if you bring 5 animals, it's 5 times these things, not just one for all 5. Kamishpat Ashertasu, any amount of animals that you bring, Kacha tasu le'echa k'misparam. For each animal, you need to bring this amount. Kalo ezrach yase kacha se'ela. All the citizens, meaning the natives, the born Jews, have to bring this amount. La'akiv ished ech nechech l'Hashem, to bring this satisfying aroma to Hashem. And then it says like this, v'chiyogur itchem ger, if a convert will live with you, or asher b'seichachan adariseichem for future generations, v'ase ished ech nechech l'Hashem, and he'll bring this sacrifice to Hashem, kasher tasu, the way you do it, ken yase. And by here the Gemara is referring to, the Mefarshim explain, the commentators explain over here, even though simply the pasuk means, if a guy's a convert, again, he has to bring the same flower offerings for his korban. But the Gemara, the Mefarshim will explain, over here is another din. In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, by the way, when somebody converted, there are three steps of conversion. Three if it's a man, two if it's woman. When a man converted in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, he needed circumcision, mikvah, and sacrifice. Part of the conversion process. And in that order, by the way. Circumcision, mikvah, sacrifice. Woman, obviously no bris. Mikvah, korban. So it says that, so what do we do now? There's no Beis Hamikdash. So what do all the converts do? So it says, you become a Jew 100% with the two processes. Bris and mikveh, or a woman mikveh, and acceptance of mitzvahs. But the korban does not stop you from being a full-fledged Jew. You cannot eat any sacrifices or anything like that until you bring the korban. So the Rambam writes in the Gemara that when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a long line. All the converts that converted to Judaism throughout the ages owe this korban to Hashem when Mashiach comes. All the converts of all generations are going to have to... By the way, this is derived from Matan Torah. The Jews had bris and mikveh, and they had to bring a korban, like it says in the Chumash.
Was it tax deductible?
Yeah, tax deductible.
They paid taxes then, no?
Yeah, but they had nothing to do with these tax deductibles.
Under the king, I think.
The king had taxes on the people.
But they couldn't deduct it from their income?
No.
No.
They didn't have the IRS exceptions.
This is the gear that they should anything before they do this one, because now gear they are already converted. They are Judaism.
No, I said... Today, again, who does mikveh and bris and accept mitzvahs, 100% Jewish. The only thing is, they have a debt. They have to bring a korban when Mashiach comes.
So there's a whole bunch of other rules also. Besides, can't just go...
No, you have to mean it. Accept mitzvahs, yeah. It's not
And isn't it kind of, God forbid to say, limiting that Hashem can't smell the korban? I mean...
No, if you say God smells the korban, that's limiting him that he has a nose.
No, that could be one of the ways that he enjoys the korban. I mean, it could be literal.
Trust me, God's not a physical body that has a nose that smells.
Maybe not a nose, but sense it. And it's like that, I don't know, something needs to happen here for him to sense something.
It's different language for different things. How do you measure the depth of an ocean? Feet, miles. Correct? How do you measure the depth of a brain? When you say somebody has a very deep head, it means it's 10 feet deep versus somebody is not so smart as a 5 foot deep head. The word deep is a different meaning. Okay? When you say somebody has a big heart, yeah, it means he's generous, right? You say you have a big heart. It means his heart is like this, and the miser is like this, and in between is like this. That's not what it means. Correct? When you speak about the word smell for God, it doesn't mean physically smelling, because God doesn't have a physical body. Okay, Okay, Hakol Pasik Tezvav. Hakol, the whole community. Chuka Achas Lachem, there's one law for all of you. V'lager Agor, and for the convert that lives amongst you. Chukas Eilam L'Dereisechem, this is for all times, as long as there's a Beis HaMikdash, obviously. Kager Yi Alefnei Hashem, you and the converts are equal in as far as that goes, meaning for all generations that the Jew who converted has the same obligations to all these things. And like the Mepharshim explained, what it means is that when Mashiach comes, that's when they're going to bring the Korban. Teira achas u'mishpat echad yilachem. One teaching, one judgment is for all Jews, for all people. Lager agar b'itchem, and to the ger that lives with you. So the commentators just add one more point over here, and that is that even though the convert has no share in the land of Israel, so somebody might think that if so, then they don't have to bring these flower offerings and the wine offerings. Listen, because it said, the Torah says, when you come to the land, then you're going to have to bring these libations. But if you don't live in Eretz Yisrael, you don't own land that could convert. It doesn't belong to any tribe. So maybe I would think he wouldn't have to. So the Pasuk says, no. Torah achas yalachem, they still have to do it. Even though you have no share in the land, but if you're a Jew, the Torah says, then you have to bring these libations, just like a Jew that was, so to speak, born Jewish, or whatever it is. But
when Mashiach comes, we need to do also
the Rambam writes, when Mashiach comes, we're going back to the good old style. The Beis Din is going to decide when Rosh Chodesh is. There's going to be sacrifices. Everything's going back to the way it was. Will PETA and all those other organizations demonstrate? Doubt it. Because Mashiach comes, even they will see the light.
We need to do mitzvah at the time of Mashiach?
Yeah. Especially the initial state. And even after the initial state, even then we're going to do mitzvah, but on a completely different level.